always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside. Today's show is obviously brought to you by Prize Picks. Use that, or in video form, it is brought to you by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and get $50 worth of lineups if you play a $5 lineup. Join on this fine Thursday night in a bit of a switch up. by Jovan Buha of Buha's Block. For one thing, Jovan, it has been way too long since you and I have podcasted together. And then in probably about 12 hours or so, I think the plan is for us to podcast with Pete again. So we're going to rectify that now and then overcompensate over the next however long stretch. How you holding up, bud?
I'm doing well. It's been, I just did my preview on my show last night, and that involved like rewatching all three games, poring over a bunch of numbers, doing a bunch of research. So I probably put a good, 20 hours of work into that pod, like going into it. So I've been kind of burning the candle on both ends, but we're here, man. Like this is what we do it for, is the playoffs. And I'm really excited. Not the circumstances we wanted for the Lakers, but who knows? Maybe Luka returns game three, game four, and the Lakers pull off an improbable upset. So I'm really excited for Saturday.
If Luka is able to return at any point in this series, I feel like we just got to start shipping athletes to Spain for no matter what it is. That pops up. So the way that this episode is going to go, Jovan and Pete and I tentatively are planning on talking tomorrow and previewing, like deep diving this upcoming series and talking about it in its fullest. And what I didn't want to do is the night before we do that, Jovan and I do the very same thing and then basically just like add Pete as some kind of like topper on the cake. So what Jovan and I are going to do instead is look past this upcoming playoff run, however long it hopefully runs, and discuss this offseason that is to come, which I think is still a very prevalent conversation because some of the limitations on this roster and some of the limitations as far as like our forecasting what this team is capable of in the playoffs with or without Luka Doncic has a lot to do with the fact that the front office was also looking ahead to this upcoming offseason. So we're going to talk about like how, some of the options that the Lakers have. We're going to talk about, whether that's running it back or a complete overhaul, the stakes involved for the parties that are going to be making some of these decisions, LeBron's upcoming decision as well, which it's been interesting over the last few days or so, watching some of the reporting on that kind of sway back towards, well maybe LeBron could return. So we'll talk about that and just kind of generally, riff on a vastly, like an incredibly interesting offseason to come. So I want to start here, Jovan, and I've had this question presented to me a few times over from people around the league, which is like, how would you feel about an offseason that was based on the success of March, the successes of March, where the Lakers basically look at March as the proof of concept and run the core of this roster back with a couple of tweaks on the peripheries? That means, obviously Austin resigns, LeBron resigns, Rui maybe even resigns. Maybe you flip Dalton and Vando for another rotation caliber player. You have a couple of you know, first rounders that you could be able to move this upcoming offseason. So that actually allows you to upgrade the roster beyond running it back, but mostly kind of starting with what, how would you feel about running this group back based on what we saw from this group in March?
I wouldn't love it. I mean, it depends how you want to view it, but I don't think you can, like, yes, that was their healthiest month. So if you want to be the ultimate optimist, you can say, well, this is the proof of concept for, you know, could they bottle that up for an entire season and win like 60 plus games or something like that? I think that's a very optimistic viewpoint on this. And I think part of the experience is also some of the lulls that we saw in December and January and February. Like I kind of view the Lakers season in three parts. And so they have the 15-4 start, which includes LeBron. Like I think people often talk about that as if LeBron was not a part of that. LeBron was a part of that. They had, he was there for half of the 7-game win streak that they had. So 15-4 start. They have this long malaise in the middle of the season where they go 19-20. Starting December 1st through late February, over a 3-month stretch, they go 19-20 and are a sub 500 team. Then they close the month out strong, you know, the season out strong, going 19-5 to close things out there. So I think like the current roster, just like that, that's kind of the group, is they had a bunch of like embarrassing losses to good teams. Then they finally put it together down the final 6 weeks of the season. They beat a lot of the bad teams. And we even saw that without Luka and Austin at the end of the season, they were still beating some of those teams. And that's how they finished the season 3-2. But I think that's a very optimistic take. I think what we did see is like the big three worked together and starting in, you know, from January on, the net rating with the big three on the floor and the different combinations, especially once they shifted Marcus Smart into the starting group, that worked together. And I think there's something there with that, to the point of it makes a lot of sense to bring back LeBron, to sign him to a certain number and to then fill in the gaps and pieces around them. But I think there's still like two, I would say three glaring holes on this team. In general, I don't think the team is deep enough. I think after spot number three in the pecking order, everybody is slotted 1 to 2 spots higher than they should be. Like I think Marcus Smart is their fourth best player. I think you probably want Marcus Smart as like your sixth best player, right? Yeah. And then like kind of going down the list, everybody's slotted a little bit higher than they should be in the hierarchy outside of the big three. The athleticism gap, like we saw it at the low points of the season, the Lakers just look like the least athletic team in the league, and teams were able to ball pressure them, turn them over, run on them, and it just like they looked like they were playing in molasses. And then still defensively, they were top 10 in March, but outside of March, they've basically been a bottom 10 defense in every other month. There's a real limitation there with the current group and just the defensive personnel. I think particularly at the center position, they've been one of the worst rim protecting teams all season. And DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes are like mobile bigs, but they're not really going to be protecting the rim at a high level. So I still think that like there's a lot to like about the current group. They're a really good team. They would have been the 3 seed if Luka and Austin didn't go down. I think they would have made the second round at least if Luka and Austin didn't go down. So you can judge that. But to get to the next level, to get to where OKC's at, to get to where San Antonio and Boston and maybe even Denver are at, I think they need to make a couple of notable additions this summer.
Also, you're shooting at a moving target because OKC's about to get another lottery pick. Boston is going to have a fully healthy Jason Tatum next year. Detroit is going to be a year better next year than they were this year. San Antonio is going to be like, they're way ahead of schedule. They're going to be, you know, next year we're going to be talking about them as like maybe the title favorite is probably how I'm moving into the conversation about them. Denver, maybe they take a slight step back, you know, but probably not. So like you're talking about like, this is part of why I really wanted the Lakers to go for it this year, is because you had this kind of, amalgamation of opportunities where you had Austin way underpaid, you had Luka probably way underpaid, you had LeBron at, you know, he's not going to get any better at basketball moving forward, you know, at this stage of his career. You had, you know, San Antonio doesn't quite have their postseason chops quite yet. Denver has dealt with injuries all year. Detroit is pretty unproven. Boston doesn't have Jason Tatum. The only team, the only buzzsaw potentially is still OKC. But even they have been, they've had kind of a weird season with the Jalen Williams being in and out of the rotation and in and out of the lineup. Like, this felt like the year to kind of go for it and to make your decision on what kind of offseason you should have based on one really good month from the nth degree opportunity that the Lakers had this year, I think would be pretty short-sighted. I do think, though, like one of the points that you hit on there that I think is worth really hammering home, though, is that we did eventually and finally see the Luka, Austin, LeBron trio have the kind of impact that they needed to have if the Lakers ever had any chance of figuring into that conversation, that championship conversation. Given that we finally saw that, it does make me kind of want to see that group back of, you know, more. And a lot of this is predicated on the number that LeBron would potentially return on, the number that he would get from other teams, you know, and how that compares relatively to what the Lakers could potentially offer. I've been pretty steadfast in my opinion that LeBron returning made the most sense for all parties. And I think it's funny that we have, you know, just, it's not funny. It's funny in like train is on its way towards you and you chuckle like right before contact, that kind of funny. But like, it is kind of funny to be like, to be staring down the barrel of this upcoming series and be like, well, maybe playoff LeBron, when all year, a lot of Lakers fans have been like, get this guy out of here. We're, you know, $55 million was way too much for this guy. And we're sick of the Bronny roster spot. We're doing, you know, all of this stuff. And now, you know, as we approach this upcoming postseason, it's like, maybe playoff LeBron can happen one more time. And I'm sorry, those points are mutually exclusive of like LeBron should have been on a vet min this year. And maybe LeBron can win us a playoff series here. Those are mutually exclusive talking points. And the fact that we have arrived here at hoping that LeBron can keep this ship afloat while the Lakers hope to get Luka and Austin back really makes me think that like him coming back at a, you know, relatively fair number makes the most sense for all parties here. And I've looked across all year at like what his other options could potentially be, and I've never really found an opportunity that checked very many boxes. I still say that if I were to predict how this is going to play out, that LeBron is going to be a Laker on opening night of next year. Has the way that the end of this season has played out and those playoffs hopes being attached so thoroughly to LeBron changed your stance on that front?
No, I think I just have gotten a little bit more clarity in terms of the conversations I've had and the buzz that's been out there, that it seems to be trending more in the direction of him returning. Whereas I would say a couple months ago, more of the buzz and conversation out there had been him likely going elsewhere. Right. And then at a couple points of the season, there was some buzz about him potentially retiring. Right. So it's sort of been all over the place. And those are the three.
He's never known. Like, that's why he's so not many announced different buzzes. Yeah.
So I think that's also been a consistent thing with anyone that's close to him. The messaging will be LeBron has not made any decisions about whether he wants to play next year, if it's going to be LA, if it's going to be somewhere else. Like, LeBron doesn't even know what he wants to do necessarily. So that's where you'll hear different agendas or different things being floated out there. I think the interesting thing within all this is that LeBron is such a omnipresent force just by being LeBron, right? Like, he is,
yeah,
I think the most famous US athlete currently, right? And has been for a decade at least. And so like just by existing and being LeBron, like there's a certain amount of attention and scrutiny and all the media stuff that comes with that. And also just he's playing really good basketball. He was just an all-star this year. We've seen now with Luka and Austin out, he's been able to ramp up the usage, be a number one option, do so very effectively and efficiently. And so I think the one thing for me that I've been grappling with all season has just been like, at some point, LeBron is going to retire, right? And at some point, he is no longer going to be a Laker. And whether that's this summer or whether that's 2027, 2028, whenever that ends up happening, it is going to be a big loss for the group and a big shift in terms of the makeup of the roster and the starters and like the closers and just sort of the ethos of the next iteration of Lakers basketball. And so I think the thing I've grappled with is just like the longer LeBron is a Laker, the longer you are prolonging that bridge into the next era of Lakers basketball, because there will eventually be a next era of Lakers basketball post LeBron. Now, again, it seems like it's going to continue for at least another season. Maybe it's another couple. And I think there's a legitimate basketball reasons for that and many reasons for that. It's interesting because it does to me delay then, like if you're keeping the big three going, which I think they're going to, or at least that's the way it seems like it's trending. Then you, whatever that next version around Luka and Austin is, gets kind of pushed into another season out, or maybe even another season out. And you're, and now look, this season, like this stretch might just be so good that you want to keep it going, right? But I do think at some point they have to figure out what the next version of Lakers basketball is going to look like. And it seemed like that was potentially going to be this summer, but now it's looking like maybe not till 2027, or who knows, maybe even 2028.
2038. I don't know. Who knows? Like with
he could play forever. He could play forever.
It's insane. What I do like one, as you were talking there, the point that kept on floating to the, you know, to the forefront here in my brain was Austin, right? Like this debate, both internally within the Lakers organization, externally with those of us who talk about this stuff around the league, all this stuff, there is legitimate like curiosity as to like what Austin Reeves' role should be on a team vying for a championship when he is making, let's say he's probably making around $40 million next year, right? And because he's going to be making, like, whether it's with the Lakers, whether it's in Atlanta, whether it's in Chicago, wherever it would be, Austin is probably going to come in next year at around 40-ish million dollars a year. And what does a team look like with Austin at that number? And this is where I also think, you know, I've talked often a lot, you know, with LeBron's options being kind of limited here, but the Lakers' options, the possibility of having another creative engine of LeBron's caliber to help you see what type of roster you need to build around Luka and Austin at the number that you're going to have Austin at next year. LeBron gives you the luxury of, on some nights against some matchups, sliding Austin down to the third option. And you're not going to have any players on the market next year who are going to be good enough at, I think LeBron probably comes in at like $27 million next year. You're not going to find a player at $27 million who is going to be good enough to slide Austin down to the third option against some matchups. And that's where I think it makes a whole bunch of sense for the Lakers here as they, you know, try to get that clarity on what kind of team do you need to build around Luka and Austin? What kind of impact do you think Austin's impending number would have on the Lakers ceiling next season? Because that is something that I think Lakers fans are a little nervous about.
So I've been making this point the last 2-3 weeks, and it just kind of clicked in my head, and it's not like this grand revelation, but I don't think Austin's number is going to really impact things as much as people are indicating, because they are going to retain him, you know, to start the offseason on his cap hold. So this whole like $50 million or $55 million or whatever number the Lakers end up having in terms of cap space is already baking in Austin at that $20.9 million cap hold. And then they will be going above the cap to re-sign him. So could you argue that like in a season from now or a couple seasons from now, if Austin hasn't continued to progress or maintain a certain level, that that contract could age poorly and that that could be an anchor on their cap sheet? Sure, that that is within the realm of possibility. But I think if you look at the guards in that $30 to $35 million range, I would take Austin over every single one of them.